Welcome to Independent Perspective in Depth, a program presented in the public interest by Western New York Independent Living Family of Agencies, courtesy of the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Using this longer format, we will be exploring the broader issues affecting the community of people with disabilities in discussions with knowledgeable individuals from a variety of organizations and backgrounds. We're delighted to have as our guest for today, Todd Vowerk, Chief Policy Officer of Western New York Independent Living, Inc. I'm your host, Ernie Churchwell. Welcome to the program, Todd.
Always a pleasure to be here.
It's our pleasure to have you, as you are the fount of all knowledge on things legal. If you were with us for the previous two recent podcasts of Independent Perspective in Depth, you know that the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990, or ADA, was perhaps the most significant legislation barring disability-based discrimination in the history of America, and some say in the world. To remind you, prior to the ADA, there was just a patchwork of anti-discrimination laws that only applied in particular circumstances, such as buying a home or boarding an airplane. We've learned that ADA Title I was all about preventing disability-related bias in employment. Once work is in place, the next area that significantly affects the lives of citizens with disabilities is their connection with government entities.
That's a pretty good summary, but we want to be able to add a little bit something to that in terms of this discussion. Remember when we talked about Title I, we mentioned that the original entire purpose of the ADA was about employment. And when they were doing drafts of the ADA and discussing it with congressional representatives, we got into these broader discussions about other areas of public and private life that should be covered by the law that didn't get a lot of coverage. And Title II is one of them, right? This is a whole thing about, well, there's, you know, no accessible places to spend our money. Why would we do that? That's Title III. We'll talk about that in the next show. But there's all this argument about, well, you know, what am I going to use money for? I'm going to buy a home. Well, how do I deal with the local government when I buy a home? How do I deal with the local government when I'm dealing with government services, right? And Title II was actually kind of Title II based on the importance of government services being accessible, because that's the part you called exactly right.
All right, so basically Title II covers anything where people with disabilities have to interface with the government to get things done like everyone else.
Right. State and local government.
Yes. Okay. Well, this covers a lot of the area of potential assistance for people with disabilities. But the question that probably comes to people's minds is, why does it just cover state and local governments but not federal?
Well, because the federal government has their own law. The federal government has Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. Right. And this is what Title II is actually based on. What they did was something very simple. They said, OK, the standard we've applied to the federal government that we've been working with for the last 6 or 7 years is really the standard we want all government to follow. So basically, they just kind of copied the standards for 504 into Title II. And started talking about how they accomplish those things in the title.
All right. Well, to give more specifics to what you're talking about, what sort of programs are available from state or local governments or the agencies that they control that can assist people with disabilities? And what sort of discrimination does the law prohibit in each?
Well, okay. So this is a really big question. Right. And we're only going to be here for 30 minutes. So I want the listeners out there to think about ways that they interact with their local government, right? Whether it's the county government, the city, town, or village government, or the state government, right? The list of programs is immense. The schools are run by local governments, right? With funding from the state government, right? Yeah. You need a driver's license, you're going to go to state government. You need a permit, you're going to go to local government. You need a building permit, you're going to go to local government. You need a fishing permit, you're going to go to state government, right? Most of our local recreation, right, has some tie to a local government entity. For those listeners out there who are Buffalo locals, you know that we're constructing a new stadium right now for our NFL sports team. The current stadium is on county land. So it's a Title II entity, right? Erie County controls that activity. The new stadium, once it's constructed, is going to be on state land. So it's going to be the state government that's going to have the final say about what happens in the new stadium, right? All of that is Title II, right? Also, your local recreational facilities, your ballparks, your playgrounds, right? All of that stuff. Paying your property taxes, taking out your garbage and recycling, right? Even participating in your local government and involving yourself in council meetings or board meetings, right? Or subcommittees of those government entities, and your ability to be able to participate and testify and get your word to them. All of that is covered under Title II.
I had to, when you think about it, things that involve state and local governments are probably too numerous to mention, although you did a jolly good job of summarizing them, I dare say. But something that comes to mind, similar to the employers under Title I, the ADA does not demand that government agencies deplete their entire budgets to accommodate the needs of a handful of citizens with disabilities, just that they have program access, as those seeking assistance will not be needing the same kind of help, such as reaching into high file cabinet drawers at the office. What sort of things might they need?
Well, it's a good thing to remember because it does talk about the standard of program access. Title II does not demand equal access in the same way that Title III does, which we'll get to in the next episode. Title II is about saying, okay, the service that's provided to members of the public is the thing that needs to be accommodated, right? And you're right. You're not talking about like on the job, like how you're going to get into that file cabinet. But I give you an example from my own childhood, right? A couple times a year, there'd be, well, a group of social workers that would come to my house. I say that because I've never found a good word for a group of social workers, right?
Oh, it's
Murder of Crows, Parliament of Owls, right? Not a,
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, they need a word to themselves. But one of those people that came to my house was an Erie County social worker who did our welfare, food stamp, and Medicaid benefit. Because until the mid-80s, the county office building wasn't accessible, right?
I'm
So,
shocked.
and she had two disabled kids. So the way they achieved program access was to say, we're going to send somebody out and do that with you a couple times a year, right? One of the most common things for program access is that you can do stuff by mail or by phone. If you're in a location where you're the building where that service is offered is inaccessible, right? They can do whatever they need to do in order to make the program accessible. So they don't have to build a ramp unless it's the only way to make that program accessible. They don't have to do a mod to a building unless it's the only way to make that program accessible, right? So this is more complicated than you think because not only are you talking about the needs of all different people with disabilities and all kinds of government services, right? But you don't want to bankrupt the local government. That was the whole thing with why Section 504 took so long to get regulations, right? Because the federal government was concerned that by setting this standard that no one with a disability will be denied the benefit of a program receiving federal financial assistance, they're like, this is going to bankrupt the government. This is going to be so expensive, we're not going to be able to afford to do anything. This is going to be ridiculously expensive. Turns out not so much, because reasonable accommodations, as we already talked about in Title I, our previous episode, aren't all that expensive. Construction's expensive, right? But a thing that we can talk about with radar construction is to remember that if you put accessible features in when you build a building, It's like 1/3 of 1% of the total cost of construction in the building. But if you wait until after you've built the building and then say, okay, we've got to make these mods to it to make it accessible, you could be talking about 10 to 15% of the cost of construction, right? Which is one of the reasons why it's federal law that when we build a building with federal money, we build it accessibly, right? Not only is it
Indeed.
good public policy, it's also cheaper. Now, but the way they handle that though, in Title II, all of that complexity, the way they handle it is really unique, right? The first thing that they make local governments do, right, is they make local governments designate someone to handle reasonable accommodations, right? That's called an ADA coordinator, right? And every local government's got to have somebody designated to handle reasonable accommodations, right? The second thing they require is on a regular periodic basis that the local governments do a review of what services are inaccessible and how they're inaccessible. So they start to think in their own review process, what do they need in order to be able to provide program access for this service or that service or whatever, right? And then providing that your government is big enough, over 50 people, there's a transition plan that says, all right, if you do need to make physical mods or if you do need to make program changes, you can get up to 5 years to do them, so that you can spread these things out over your budgets, right?
Okay,
Right. That's
sounds reasonable.
called the self-evaluation and transition plan, right?
Ah.
And the reason we talk about Title II that way is because we want people to be smart about what they're asking when they deal with local governments, right? Some things they're going to need to do, like, right in that moment, but some they might not. For example, if you're a person with who's deaf or hard of hearing and you need a reasonable accommodation to testify at a meeting, right? You got to let folks know kind of in advance because scheduling interpreting is a complicated process, right? So you have to, express your desire. But what happened if you didn't? What happened if you just found out about it the day before the meeting? And you want to come and figure out how to get your comment into the system, right? The ADA coordinator is going to help out with that because maybe it's a thing where someone will assist in taking a written comment and then reading the written comment into the record. All that stuff is legal under Title II.
What you said a moment ago reminded me of something that you told me about a few years back. You happened to be going by a construction site where they were putting in a major building or something, and you pointed out to the foreman that certain things they were doing were not legally allowable under the laws for access, and he said, oh yes, we'll take care of that. And then you came by later, and they hadn't taken care of it. And you talked to the foreman again. You said, yeah, well, it's already built. What are you going to do? Make us tear it down?
Yes,
But I
right.
believe you did make them do things more than they thought they'd have to do.
Yes. Well, but that's part of advocacy under Title II. That's the thing about being able to say to our listeners, this is why knowing about the ADA as you need to know about it is important. Because recognizing that when they're in the middle of construction, they still have to make sure that essential services are available to people with disabilities, right? And that was the problem with that mod they were doing, right? They're doing mods and they're blocking sidewalks. Right. And they're telling people that while we're fixing this thing over here, the only way you're going to get into that building is that inaccessible section over here. Well, how does that help me? Right. What if I'm coming? I think that started that day because I was coming to pay a, I was going to pay a parking ticket, and I came across a government building. Excuse me a moment. Thank you. But the thing about it is, suppose that happens. They're doing a mod, and your access to the building is cut off, and you've got to go pay a parking ticket, or you're protesting a parking ticket, as many of our City of Buffalo residents will know. You're protesting a parking ticket. How do you get in there to tell your story if you can't get in the building? And that's why these analyses are important. You have rights to be able to make sure that you have equal participation in government.
All right. I think this might be a good time for me to point out to our listeners that if they've just joined the program, you're listening to Independent Perspective in Depth, a program presented in the public interest by Western New York Independent Living. Our guest today is Todd Vowark, Chief Policy Officer of Western New York Independent Living. We'll continue exploring the ways the Americans with Disabilities Act bars discrimination by state and local government entities in its Title II. All right, the next question I've got is, while only state and local governments fall under the provisions of ADA Title II, who actually enforces these regulations?
Title II is enforced by the United States Department of Justice, but there's a unique thing about that, right? Normally, under the Department of Justice, you get 180 days to complain about an act of discrimination taken by a covered entity in the ADA. And covered entity is different for every title. So a covered entity in Title I is an employer. A covered entity under Title II is a local government. A covered entity under Title III might be a private business, right? You get 180 days to complain about what a covered entity does. Except in New York, where you get 300 days. Because New York, in its own civil rights law, provides 300 days to make a complaint. So while you can go directly to the United States Department of Justice to complain about Title II, one of the smart things to do is to go to the New York State Division of Human Rights about that complaint because you get more time, and they will cross-complain it with ADAG under most circumstances. So it's important to remember about complaining is to be, is to work smarter, not harder, right? Because if you're complaining directly to the federal government, right, it's going to take forever, right? You file a complaint, they'll acknowledge receive it right away. Maybe they'll send something off to the government entity to get their side of the story, but it might be a little while before anybody actually gets into looking into it, right? And they only really have 6 months. They only have 180 days because if they can't resolve it in 180 days, they got to give you a right to sue letter without a finding. Right? Yeah, when you make a complaint under Title II, there's three ways it can go. The first way isn't going to happen very often, but it's possible that your complaint is so important and might affect so many people in the disability community that Department of Justice will deliberately represent you in court. Not likely to happen, but it's possible. The second way is that they'll find it discrimination, but it's not important enough for them to handle themselves. They'll give you a right to sue letter in federal court, right? And then the third way that it happens is either they don't think it's discriminatory, or they can't determine if it's discriminatory or not. In which case, what do you get? No, no big surprise, a
They
right to
wait.
sue letter in federal court.
Oh, okay.
Right? Now, New York State, if you file with them, they'll do a little bit more investigation. They have other options in terms of remediation. You can also do mediation under Title II with a KeyBridge certified ADA mediator. That's acceptable to do. But the standard process for the state is to get people involved in some discussion early on to see if the problem can be resolved without needing to go to court and involve judges.
All right. A couple, by the way, a couple minutes ago, you just mentioned in the course of things ADAG, and I imagine there are probably some people that aren't as enmeshed in the alphabet soup as we are that don't know what that is, if you could just mention.
Oh, absolutely. The ADAG is the Americans with Disabilities Act Accessibility Guidelines. So, for all the titles of the ADA, when you talk about something being physically accessible, they're going to refer to ADAG, right? ADAG is the thing that says that an accessible doorway is a 32-inch wide minimum, but they prefer 36 inches. We'll talk more about that in the Title III section, but the important thing about ADAG is that there are deliberate regulations and things to look at in terms of how to make stuff accessible. ADAG itself is controlled and published and modified by something called the Architectural and Transportation Barrier Compliance Board, which we now colloquially call the Access Board. It's one of the federal commissions that actually has people with disabilities on it, right?
Ah.
So this is kind of our way of being able to make sure that when we're talking about something being accessible and we're setting standards for something being accessible, that it's actually usable by people with disabilities.
That's refreshing and exciting at the same time.
Isn't it?
And have you or your colleagues at Independent Living gone to bat for applicants who are discriminated against by government entities?
We do it all the time. From being able to make sure that locations are physically accessible to people with disabilities to talking about policies that are created that deliberately place barriers in front of people with disabilities. I will tell you that most of my advocacy works through an ADA coordinator because the ADA coordinators are not your enemy in this situation. Quite often, they can be your ally. So it's a thing about explaining what the problem is and figuring out how to fix it. I'm happy to say, by way of example for our listeners, for almost the entire time of my career, the City of Buffalo Common Council Chamber, right, which historically protected building, Art Deco style, built in the 40s, right, not accessible to people with disabilities.
Well.
For a really long time. So when you needed to give testimony in front of the City of Buffalo Common Council, you had to go to the special spot they gave you to park or sit down if you need a seat. And they would bring you a wireless microphone and you'd testify from basically the upper deck of the back of this room.
Well, that's better than nothing, I guess.
Yeah, but within the last few years, we've changed that. And now the chamber is completely 100% accessible. They went to great lengths to construct a lift that goes from the floor below where the bottom of the chamber is to the lower level of the chamber where you can get off, you can get out, and you can find a seat on the floor of the chamber, and you can get access to the microphones that everybody else uses to be able to make public comment. Very
Boy.
proud of the City of Buffalo for that change.
All right. And so you say that our disability rights advocates had a hand in that coming to bear to be?
Well, yes, over the almost 30 years I've done it now, we've mentioned many times about being able to make sure that things that are done in the Common Council chambers are accessible to people with disabilities. Because over the years, we've had many opportunities. For example, the state government used to want to run hearings to take comment from people, and they'd use the Common Council chambers, right? And that kind of meant that there wasn't really a way for people with disabilities to have their voice heard because there was only room for two people in wheelchairs to get to the little parking area that they created in the building. And then there wasn't a lot of room for anybody else because anybody else would be blocking a fire lane and the fire marshals would get upset. So we'd complain about that and say, you really shouldn't do public comment in the City of Buffalo Common Council chambers. You need to find some other places that are more accessible, right? And over the years, indeed, they have. The Central Branch Library downtown was a very popular place to do testimony, right? When the state comes in wanting comment. So we complained about that many times, and it was only when the city could kind of figure out a way to put money aside to do a major, building modification to a historical building that we figured out a way to do that. Now their challenge, though, is there's a section in both titles two and three about maintenance of accessible features, right? Maintenance of accessible features involves if you put an accessible feature in, right? You have to maintain it. Can't turn around and take it out. So now they built this, basically, that's this porch lift that's kind of built in a little in a what we might call an elevator shaft, right? Because it goes up like 12 feet, right, to get to the bottom of the common council chambers. Well, you got to maintain that lift so that it continues to operate.
Sounds appropriate. Todd, we only have a couple minutes left in the program. Is there anything else that needs to be called to people's attention before we leave Title II?
Well, let's just make sure that we do a quick summary for our listeners to talk about when you're dealing with state and local government, what do you do first? You find the ADA coordinator. That person is going to be the person that's going to help you get the reasonable accommodation that you need in government, right? And they're going to be looking at that transition plan and that self-evaluation, right? When you have a problem, right, you complain to the ADA coordinator because there has to be an official complaint process. And if you don't get you what you want out of the complaint process, then you can proceed to other measures. Now, I would suggest that if you've done those initial steps and you need assistance, that you come to us at the Independent Living Center because we are happy to help people with disabilities fight for the rights for which they are entitled.
All right. Well, Todd, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your substantial knowledge. And I'm sure people can get in touch with you if they still have questions.
They can absolutely do that. They can call my office, 716-836-0822, extension 101, or they can email me at T, V as in Victor, AARWERK at WNYIL.org.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
You've been listening to Independent Perspective in Depth, a program presented in the public interest by Western New York Independent Living Family of Agencies, courtesy of the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Our guest was Todd Vowork, Chief Policy Officer of Western New York Independent Living. This program features the song A Little Ditty on the Dance Floor by Jay Lang, available under a Creative Commons Attribution non-commercial license. I've been your host, Ernest Churchwell. If you wish to hear this program again a couple days after the on-air broadcast, you can find a podcast on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service's webpage, nfradioreading.org, on the Programming tab under Bonus Programs, and on wnyil.org under Public Relations Podcasts. Have a good week and be safe.